Everyone, don't forget to go to rerunnersafety.com to get yourself some cool ass merch. Get yourself sweatshirts, t-shirts, mugs, tote bags, and you can support us a little bit more. And the best of it is you wouldn't even know you're supporting a health and safety channel because it just looks cool, man. Don't forget, rerunnersafety.com. Get yourself some merch, peeps. Safe. What's up, guys? Welcome back to Rebranding Safety. Rebranding Safety is the YouTube channel and podcast doing exactly what it says on the tin. We are here to challenge the perception. We're here to challenge those health and safety gone mad practices. And we do that through amazing conversations on this podcast. And we do that through simple instructional videos on YouTube. So if you're listening on a podcast, make sure you go out and check out YouTube, and if you're listening on YouTube, make sure you go and check the podcast. Today on the podcast, we've got Ron Gant here to talk all about safety differently. Ron is the owner and contributor to safetydifferently.com, the director of innovation and operations at Reflective Consulting Group, vice president SCM Safety, and a massive player in the game. For sure, we are going to talk all about safety differently and where it fits into the myriad of health and safety solutions out there. Safety one, safety two, safety differently, behavior-based safety. There's so much we need to think about nowadays, and there's so much we talk about in this podcast. So without further ado, let's get into the podcast.
Health and safety is almost a victim of its own success.
Weird and oppressive regime of health and safety regulations.
A huge fire engulfs a tower block in London.
Children being forced to wear goggles to play conkers at school.
Worst oil field disaster, 164 dead.
Rebranding Safety, the modern health and safety podcast, crushing the stereotype. Brought to you by Risk Fluent and your host, James McPherson.
Welcome to the podcast, Ron.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
All right, thank you for coming on. It's great. So, okay, let's just get straight. We're going to talk about kind of safety differently and stuff like that. But so why don't you introduce yourself? Tell us the story of how you came to kind of be the owner and contributor to the website and what it was to you. And then we'll just kind of go down the rabbit hole from there.
Perfect. Yeah. So I was kind of raised in the safety business. My dad was a firefighter and my mom worked in public service with the fire department and whatnot. So my whole life I was surrounded with like public safety and things like that. And then, a little bit later in my childhood, my dad retired and started a company doing consulting work in occupational safety. And I always swore I'd never join it. Right out of high school, I was in a band and the band didn't work out. And so I asked my dad for a temporary job. Of course, you know, here I am 18 years later, but working for the same company. But, I kind of like a lot of people fell into safety in general, not really knowing what it was. And, you know, I started off ground floor inspecting, you know, for compliance stuff like fire extinguishers and, you know, emergency lights and things of that nature. Sort of worked my way up, got, you know, my degrees and things like that. And as I started gaining more knowledge, I started to realize, well, there's a lot more to safety than just compliance. And that piqued my curiosity as to, okay, what else is there? So that, you know, I started diving deeper and deeper and deeper. And, you know, I happened upon, the work on like management systems and risk assessments, you know, and you're like, oh, this is interesting. This is what safety is all about. I did that for a few years. Then you kind of reach the limits of that and I was okay, what else is there? And so I had to dug deeper there. And then I happened upon a book by Todd Conklin. Pre-Accident Investigation is one of his first books. And I read that book and the book itself was great. And it like really inspired me, but most importantly, actually, at the end of that book is a reading list. Like, hey, if you were interested in this, here's a bunch more stuff you can read.
Yeah.
I was the nerd who like started at the top and you know worked his way down. And that led me to more stuff to read. And so that just like really opened my eyes to this whole other approach to safety that, you know, some people call safety differently. Others call New View, Hoppers, all sorts of goofy names. And I'm sure we'll talk about some of that as we move forward in our conversation. But around also, you know, that same time, someone else I knew, I was in a master's program at that time, and they forwarded me a link to safetydifferently.com. Saying, hey, here, you're really interested in that? Well, here's a great site that's based on that. And this was like late 2013, early 2014. And when the site was just starting, Daniel Hummerdahl started the site, I didn't know at the time, but when I read the post, they blew my mind. It just opened up a whole new way of thinking for me about, you know, rethinking the role of compliance, the role of people, systems thinking. And then you start to read posts by Daniel, by Zinta, by and then Steve Sharrock, and you know, obviously Sydney Decker posts on there sometimes. And so I was just a reader of the site, but you know, I was also posting my own blog separately to that. And I just reached out to Daniel, and I can't remember what the context was for that, and we had a conversation, and he asked if I would contribute to the site. So that's kind of what got me contributing to it, because I guess he'd seen some of my posts on my own personal blog at that time. And so I started contributing. Daniel and I pretty much became fast friends, and we're still really close to this day. Shortly, maybe towards the end of 2014, 2015, I can't remember exactly when, Daniel decided he wanted to start moving away from the site and wanted to give it to someone. And so he gave it to me. And so I took it over around that time, and I've been running it since. I'm in my process of transferring out and passing the torch on to someone else, but that's where we're at right now. So it's a great site. I mean, the site, I love it because it's not just it's not my baby. I didn't make it. It's something that really transformed my way of thinking. And so, that's how I sort of came along to where I'm at, if that makes sense.
It's a fascinating website, and it's such a good idea, isn't it? It's like a smorgasbord of loads of different, it's like a buffet of loads of different people's content, which is what I like about it. I come across the other day on Spotify, like podcast playlists, and it reminded me of that web of your website, Safety Differently. Cause I thought sometimes I'm in the mood to listen to one person or one podcast all the time, but sometimes I want to mix it up and see different opinions and challenge each other and stuff like that. And you go from, it depends what mood you're in, but you go from, I don't know, let's do a safety one. You're going to go from me over to safety podcast with Richard Collins. And then you go over to the two gentlemen we were talking about just before, Safety of Work, their new podcast. And it would just be interesting to see different styles. You got Sunny GoPower as well, and that would be really interesting to see if you had that podcast. And that Safety Differently website is that in a nutshell, isn't it? It was kind of the beginnings of that, and I do like it. It's interesting.
No, I appreciate that perspective. I've never thought of it like that, from that kind of playlist-ish perspective. But yeah, you're right, and that's one of the things I loved about it. And, you know, we may talk about this more, you know, it sort of, after a while, Safety Differently sort of became a thing that had its own definition. But when I first came upon it in 2013, 2014, it didn't really have a clear definition. Mm-hmm. It sort of was just a place to explore, you know, it's like, hey, here's a place where you don't have to fall into the normal ways that here's how you're supposed to think if you're a safety person. You know, it's like, no, let's challenge that. Let's what if we didn't know how to practice safety? How would we, if we had to start all over again with zero knowledge, what would we look at? And that was what the site it was. And I think it's going to move, you know, continue to move in that direction or move back to that direction in some ways. You actually, if some people if they look deep enough into the site, the Daniel posted an email conversation between him and myself where we were talking about kind of this topic, like how safety differently was, you know, wasn't really a thing yet, but maybe it was going to become a thing. And then when it becomes the thing, what's that going to mean? And, you know, and then it sort of becomes this like self contradicting thing where, you know, we talk about non-compliance, but you have to comply with safety differently because that's the way to do it. You know?
Yeah, that's good. Yeah, that's quite funny.
But so we never really wanted it to be just one thing. We wanted it to be, like you said, kind of like a playlist. I like that. Yeah. Mm.
That's quite funny, actually. I'm going to go look for that email conversation.
I'll send you.
I'm going to have a look for that. That'd be an interesting read. Like you say, is that safety differently, you know, in its fundamental crux is kind of like challenging or move away from that, you know, try and be non-compliant. I don't know. I'm not a fan of the word compliant, but like, try and move away from your, from that kind of one set mind of compliance. But then, do you end up going down that rabbit hole of being compliant to safety differently? That is fascinating. Yeah, that's a great way of looking at it, isn't it?
We titled the post Safety Differently Differently because we thought like maybe one day we'd have to start the Safety Differently Differently site. Get people to think outside of that box.
Oh, that's a great point. So for those of us listening that don't know what Safety Differently is and how that came about, like as a concept, do you want to give us a bit of an introduction to that?
Sure. Yeah. So Safety Differently, I mean, I guess I'll preface it by saying it can be slightly different things to different people, but I'll talk about my understanding of it, my conception of it. So it did come about, I believe, through conversations between Sydney Decker and Daniel Hummerdahl. Daniel used to be a student of Sydney Decker's, and through their conversations, just this idea of challenging safety came up. And Daniel told me the story one time in an email. Subject title, Sydney had safety differently, I believe with a question mark in it, you know, and that just kind of got people, them both, well, this is interesting. And that sort of led to the site. And so since then it's sort of, you know, he started the site and got people thinking and the kind of the conversation on the site, and you'll even see that in that post I mentioned earlier between Daniel and I, sort of coalesces around three fundamental principles. But I want to kind of preface it by saying, safety differently, even if we talk about it as a thing, as a kind of a theory or a model unto itself, is more a way of thinking than an actual tool, you know? And so I put it separate to things like, you know, behavior-based safety or a management system. Those to me are a thing that's like a tool, you know, or something that you can implement in an organization. Safety differently is not so much a thing that you can implement. It's more of a mindset or a worldview. And you'll see that when you look at the principles, because they're none of them tell you what to do. They just tell you a different way to see something that we see every day. And so the first principle speaks to how do we define safety, right? And so since it's safety differently, it's sometimes easier to present it as a contrast. And obviously, you know, before I'll kind of preempt all the comments that you'll get on the podcast and say, well, all contrasts are wrong, right? It's never black and white.
But you try and preempt comments, you'll be there all day.
Yeah.
It's a dangerous road.
Yeah, exactly. So traditionally, though, and I actually feel pretty strongly about this, that this is true, even though a lot of people will disagree. I don't see evidence that it's not true. Lots of evidence that is true. Safety traditionally, and even today, is fundamentally built around the idea that we are about the prevention of negatives. We want to eliminate bad stuff, right? So whether that's accidents is the traditional, you know, thing, but, you know, some people expand beyond that and say, hey, no, we don't want to just focus on accidents. We want to focus on leading stuff, which then usually is, okay, we don't want errors or, you know, we don't want inattention or something like that. It's usually framed around what we don't want or, you know, kind of the, typically what I see is the most, I don't like the word enlightened because it sounds a bit, you know, pompous, but I don't know. I can't think of a better one right now. Definition of safety is freedom from unacceptable risk, which again is just telling us what we don't want, right? We really just don't want unacceptable risk. We put the word freedom in front of it to make it sound like something we want, but really it's, we don't want that, right? And so safety differently though says, well, that's not really safety though. You know, not, you know, getting what you get, not getting what you don't want, it's really even hard to say, doesn't necessarily get you what you want. And you know, we sort of say that that fundamentally creates a conflict in the organization because the rest of the organization is structured around getting what you want, mm-hmm. right? Whether it's quality or productivity, right? Or, you know, employee engagement or, you know, all these things that are, here's the things that we want to have in the organization. Whereas safety is like, yeah, we don't care about all that stuff. We just know what we don't want, you know? Yeah. And so we say, you know, let's change the definition of safety and let's define it by what we want. Let's focus on creating a safety mindset, which then leads to practice that helps us get those things. And so the way I define safety is it's in line with actually what some people will know as safety one and safety two. In safety two, the definition of safety is the capacity to be successful in varying conditions. Mm. So as we do this job, as conditions change over time, we can keep doing it successfully in a sustainable way, right? We can feel confident that we have provided the things that we need to sustainably get work done. And so that's the first tenet. The second tenet is about people. So what's the role of people? So if that's what we want in safety, what role do people play? Well, traditionally, again, and a lot of people disagree with me, but man, it's pretty compelling, okay? We see people as the problem. They are mm-hmm. the problem that we have to control or eliminate. Yeah. And so we can't trust them. And, you know, even some people who are like, yes, you know, we don't do that. We don't blame the workers. We blame management. Well, that's just people being the problem, just in a different part of the organization. Yeah. Safety differently, though, says that, well, no, people aren't the problem. They're the solution. Now, this doesn't mean that people are perfect. That's not what we're saying. What we're saying, though, and what's really, I think, compelling about this argument that we're making, and I don't want to go too much into the weeds unless you really want to get into it, but it's a, what this tenet is really telling us is that the problem in safety isn't deviation, it's complexity. And if organizations are complex, the only way to deal with complexity is creative problem solving, right? Mm-hmm. And so what things in nature are the best creative problem solvers? People. Right. There's, you know, people have the ability to adapt to a wide range of circumstances and a wide range of conditions. That's why we're the most successful species on Earth and we can live anywhere, you know, on Earth. Right. Because we have found ways to adapt and solve these problems. And so if we can, as an organization, can tap into that potential of people to creatively problem solve, we can not only deal with the issues that we have, but create new potential in the organization to achieve success in that sustainable way. So that's the second tenet. The third tenet is, and this is where I sort of, you know, a lot of people will say it's, you know, it's rather than a bureaucratic accountability, it's an ethical responsibility. And I'll explain that, but I have a slightly different take on it. So people will typically say, well, safety is about, you know, where do we focus? Well, we focus on bureaucratic accountability up. That's usually how safety is designed in organizations. We do what we do because the regulator tells us that's what we need to do, or that's what corporate tells us we need to do. So there's a bureaucracy that we create and we have to report up to that bureaucracy. And there's a lot of accountability in it. And that's true. And, you know, the kind of slant to that, that a lot of people will say, well, no, we should be doing safety because it's an ethical responsibility. And I agree with that wholeheartedly, right? It's the right thing to do. The reason why I have a slightly different take on it is that doesn't sound very different to me. That just sounds like the right thing to do, you know? To me, I think really what that tenet is trying to tell us, and so I say it in a different way, is rather than focusing on, you know, compliance or even things just like hazards, I think we should be focusing on work. Mm. How do people get work done and what can we do to support work in organizations? For a profession that is so wrapped around and influential over and influenced by work, we know very little about what people do when they do work. We know about what accidents, you know, what causes accidents and all that kind of stuff, but we don't know what it takes to get work done on a daily basis. And so to me, safety differently really tells us, no, we need to start understanding what's happening the overwhelming majority of the time when nothing bad is happening. What do people have to overcome in order to do their work? And if we can understand that, you can start to not only fix some of the issues, but even predict problems coming into the future and find new opportunities for new potential, you know, to be more and more successful. So the three tenets, again, as I see them, are safety is the presence of positives, right? A capacity to be successful. People are the solution, and we should be focusing on work, right? That should be our primary focus. So that's basically safety differently as I understand it.
I love that. Oh, it just, it's so interesting to, like, you know, I've read loads about safety differently, but then to hear you kind of talk it from your point of view, it's so interesting. Do you know what, like, the people are the solution is something I've said for a long time. Change the narrative is sort of something I say all the time. The narrative around safety is negative, negative, negative. We need to talk about, you know, a risk assessment is not. And I always try to, I'm not an overly academic person, so when I kind of explain things, it's always as simple as possible because it's the only way I learn. So yeah. I try and do it like that. So, you know, like, a risk assessment for me is not how, what's wrong with this. It's how can we do what we need to do. What we need to do as a business is, I don't know, sell this product. Okay, how can we sell this product without hurting anybody? How much risk are we willing to take to sell this, to do this? And it's interesting to, I was listening to something by Ruth Denyer there. She's head of safety or head of risk, I think, for ITV. And she was talking, they're doing loads of work about kind of redesigning how they do risk assessments. And she was putting, just on the wall, you know, what level of risk are you willing to accept? So they're talking about, like, risk appetite and stuff like that. She put fatality, lost limb, and then you kind of work your way around. And obviously none of the CEOs and board of directors said fatality. But then she said, well, but you're sending a reporter into Iraq where fatality is actually quite possible. And, yeah. And if you look at it, you look at the, you know, you've got those horror stories of things like that. And listening to her speak about it, I was like, wow, that's a really good way of just kind of putting it into context and making it real simple and asking those simple questions that actually you do need to accept that something could go wrong. But if you change the narrative to how can we do this as safe as possible, you're going to create a great business in essence. But I mean, there was so much you said there. I was thinking, I feel like I should be taking notes because there's so much I want to talk about. I think there is so much I want to talk about. Let's stick with this safety differently. You mentioned safety one, safety two. You mentioned new view, old view. So we've got safety differently, safety one, safety two, new view, old view. We could carry on compliance. Behavioral-based safety.
Yeah.
HOPS, nudge theory, culture-based safety I heard a few months back. So we've got 10 just off the top of our heads.
Yeah.
And actually just, you know, we were talking about it just before we pressed record, weren't we, about, you know, other people discussing that behavioral-based safety is potentially nonsense and things like that. And like I say, I'm a bit on the fence. I think there's no one solution and one problem. The problem is that we are looking for one solution, I think. So how does a business kind of pick one of those things? You know, there's so much. How do we actually, you know, like my grandma always says, you can't see the wood for the trees. And it's kind of like that. There's so many solutions here. It's like, oh, which one's right for me? Yeah. You end up going down that rabbit hole like you did, you know, with book after book after book, because you get to the back and it says, here's another 50 books. Yeah. You get that one of those books, there's another 50 books. And yeah. I'm exactly like you. I've got a whole stack of books behind me and I'm still none the wiser.
Yeah, right. Yeah. No, I think you're right. And I think, you know, you said something I think is really profound in that, you know, part of the problem is that we think that there is one solution. And as much as it's so weird to me how we have these tropes in safety and in organizations in general, but in safety in particular, where we say, oh, there's no silver bullet. Everybody says that, but we act like that's true, right? Yeah. We go and we look for, oh, I have this problem. Let me go find the solution to it.
Well, yeah.
That's the silver bullet you're looking for. Right? That's what you're looking for. And you know, it's really just where we decide to draw the line in terms of the scale. We say, well, there's no silver bullet at the organizational level, but there's a silver bullet for this, you know. Well, you know, that now we're just kind of talking out of both sides of our mouth, and it's kind of arbitrary. So to me, the way to weed through all of this is to take a step back and say, oh, you know, all of these things are in some ways a solution or a tool, or, you know, some sort of something we can implement, something that we're trying to solve a problem or take advantage of an opportunity. That begs a really important question. What problem are we trying to solve? You know, what exactly are we trying to do? And have we taken the time to really dive into that problem and understand it? Oftentimes, you know, actually, I was reading an article by Daniel on a different website where he was posting how there's a lot of times in kind of management consulting practice where people will say, well, you want to create a problem statement and you want it to be succinct and, you know, really concise, you're really small. And sometimes that actually makes things worse. That feeds into silver bullet thinking. Mm-hmm. And his argument was, no, sometimes we need to take a step back and expand the problem. Understanding of the problem, so that helps us know, okay, for this particular case, this solution will be best. Because I'm a big believer that there's no real, I mean, all theories, even ones that are panned to this day, you know, Heinrich, I'm no real fan of Heinrich, but Heinrich's beliefs and theories, and I assume most people know, who's listening, know Heinrich is, but just in case, he was a researcher in the early 20th century who came up with theories like the, you know, the pyramid, and his theory about 88% of accidents were caused by unsafe acts. Those theories are true in certain circumstances or contexts. And it's on us to figure out, A, what those circumstances and contexts are, and B, does that apply to our situation? Mm. Now, personally, we'll believe when we do that, we'll find that most of those theories are no longer very applicable, or maybe never were applicable to most circumstances organizations will face. But still, if we go and do the work and we define the problem well and we know what the tools are, I mean, how many safety people get upset when a worker uses the wrong tool and we say, well, that's not the right tool for the job. But we don't ever take the time to go and look at, okay, what's this tool actually designed for? You know, like root cause analysis is a commonly used accident investigation tool, but it was not really designed for that. It was designed for understanding equipment failures. And since then, we've sort of tacked on other stuff to it to make it work for people. But do we ever take the time to take a step back and say, wait, is this the right tool for this job? You know, and I think we need to do a lot more of that. And that's what I think will help us wade through some of the, okay, which perspective, which tool, you know, BBS or HOP or whatever will help me here.
Mm. I think there was something you said earlier as well around like people being unbelievably good problem solvers, which some people as safety professionals might say, yeah, that's the problem. You know, they're finding like safety slowing them down or whatever. And bear with me, I'll get to the point of this. And so they cut the corner or they use the wrong tool. And when you said the tool, it brought me back to my first job in safety. And we had an explosive atmosphere. And because it was an explosive atmosphere, we had brass tools. So that there was no, we were reducing it like the sparks. Yeah. So if you got like another tool, you could hit it off a nut or a bolt and you create a spark. So you get the brass tool. Problem with brass is it's soft as butter, really, to some of these screws and bead bolts. So we would go down and yet again, they've stopped using the brass tool that cost us loads of money, and they're using these other tools. And you're just like, why are you not using a brass tool? We get them another brass tool, and it would just be this perpetual cycle of annoyance. And I was only like 20 at something at the time, and I'm already grey, you know, because of this tool. And you just keep going and going. And then we finally get to the point, right, let's just sit down and have a sensible conversation about, and it, yeah, as a young safety professional, it took us a long time to get to the point where, let's just ask why. Why are you not using this tool? And I finally got like a quite a reasonable operator that didn't just bite my head off. And we got the tool, and he showed me that you put it on a bolt and you move it and it just chews away. So they can't do their job. Because they're great problem solvers, he just went, right, get rid of that, get another tool. They were bringing their own in because they're solving a problem. And I think that's one of the biggest things that we focus on. My point is that we focus on the next system that's going to fix everything, like behavioral-based safety, HOP, nudge, whatever. And what we're not doing is looking at the system we've already got, which is a collection of phenomenally minded people that know their job inside out, that probably have the solution for that one single problem. Yeah. And we're looking for a system instead of just having a conversation. And that's just my opinion.
No, absolutely. I agree 100%. I mean, you know, I think Rosa Carrillo is a really big leader in this sort of mindset of like, well, you know, a lot of this boils down to the conversations and the relationships that we have in the organization. And to me, the future of the safety profession is not in building our technical competence. It's in building our relational competence and our ability to ask good questions and relate to people. It just blows my mind that I work in a profession where I get paid to tell people to do jobs that I've never done before. Right? That's insane.
Yeah.
And I have no real understanding or experience with it. Right? And so, so to me, that means I shouldn't be telling people what to do. I should be asking them what's going on. And, you know, certainly I have knowledge and expertise to bring to the table. In like risk analysis and, you know, human factors and things of that nature, but I don't know about, you know, what it takes to turn a bolt, you know, in a particular, you know, chemical plant, right? They know that. Yeah. And so we need to be able to get good at drawing that information out of people, you know? And so, because going back to, you know, we were talking about those tenants, I'm a big believer. And I think what you just described is perfect. You know, where work is difficult, that's where you're going to find problems. Right. And that's like, that is the essence of, you know, what people talk about, in my opinion, with safety differently. If we can identify and deal with those places where work is difficult, where people have to overcome problems to get work done, you're not only going to deal with a lot of safety issues, but you're also going to deal with a lot of productivity and quality issues as well.
Yeah.
Right. And that's the ball game right there.
Yeah, I think we spoke about this on our prep on our conversation before, but I'm reading a book at the moment by Matthew Syed, who's become quite, you know, big and very popular nowadays. And his new book, Rebel Ideas, talks all about diversity of mindset and people. So you've got your base level of diversity with like ethnic minorities and religion and stuff like that. But I'm only halfway through the book, but what I get from it so far is that with those different ethnic minorities, cultures, etc., comes a different way of thinking. And the examples you give, which I've probably said on every podcast now, so any kind of loyal listeners probably got, here he goes with the fish tank example. But he talks in this thing about, in this book, about he got some Americans and some Japanese people to look at a fish tank. And the Japanese people, when they were asked to describe it, they described the background, the grass, the sand, the rocks, etc. They didn't really mention the fish. When they asked the Americans to describe it, they described the fish. They didn't really describe the background. So if you only employ Americans, you only ever see the fish. Mm. If you only employ Japanese people, you only ever see the tank. But if you employ the two, you see the whole tank and the fish and everything. And then I was thinking, when I'm reading this stuff, I'm trying to think, how does that apply to our business? And then I think, and the point of where I'm trying to get to is that I don't think there was ever a problem with the original system, because when we were always taught to do risk assessments, you were always told to do it as a team. It was never intended to be one person doing it. It was always meant to be the machine operator, the team leader, the manager, the safety rep, whoever. Hey, screw it, let's go get someone from customer services as well. You know, so they just don't know the machine, but they've got a completely different way of thinking. all together having a conversation. That's all the risk assessment is supposed to be, conversation about the risks of the job and how we can do what we need to do. And then the law even said, well, the UK law even says, you know, come up with something that's reasonable and practicable to be able to do what you need to do, but as safe as possible. Mm-hmm. And the point here is that I think we've gone down a route, and we don't get me wrong, the law and all the systems that we've got at the moment, the compliance-based systems that we've got, have got us to a great place, especially in the UK. You know, we're only killing 130 people a year, up to 140. Oh, well done. You know, if you were a family of that 130, I'm sure you wouldn't think it was that good. But before I get on my soapbox, the point here is that, you know, we have to acknowledge we've done an amazing job. We're not sending kids up chimneys anymore. Amazing. But we're looking for this new system, behavior-based safety, HOP, whatever, to take us to the next place forward. And I just think, well, hang on a minute. I think we've already got that system. It's in our people. It's in our current law that's very, very flexible, I think, in my opinion. A lot of people call it grey. I just think it's flexible. But we're just not using the people that we've got. And I suppose it's very similar to the example I gave earlier. But I just think everything's there right in front of us. The law's not the problem. The safety people are not the problem. It's businesses being lazy, I think, because the way I'm talking about doing safety is slow and hard, and you've got to talk to people, and people are a pain in the ass sometimes. You've got to go talk to Bob. Bob's just a grumpy old man who doesn't want to be here. And, you know, you've got to talk to Sheila, and Sheila's, you know, had a bad day yesterday, so she's going to be horrible, and it's just awkward. Especially in England, we've got this, you know, stiff upper lip. We don't like talking to each other. And I just, it frustrates me sometimes that I think the answer's right in front of you.
Yeah. No, I hear you. I think, and that's one of the reasons why I really believe that if, you know, if we're talking about, you know, HOP or safety differently as a thing, or safety too in particular, that they're not things that replace. They are mindsets that we bring to the table, right? Mm-hmm. So when we do a risk assessment, we're not going to stop doing them because, hey, you gotta, right? You don't have a choice unless you want to break the law. you know, there's a good reason to do them and they add value. We just want to make sure that they are adding value. And so we need to do that in the right way, or we should stop doing it. You know, doing safety for the sake of safety is stupid. you know, it's a huge waste. And so, we're not, you know, doing the organization any favors, and I don't think we're really saving any lives if we're not making sure that we add value. And so to me, I think you're totally right. You know, so that comes back to that mindset of, let's take a step back, let's understand what are we trying to do and what are the tools and things that are out there that help us do that. But sorry, those are my dogs. They have an opinion on this matter. I agree, you know, and yeah, there was a kind of a debate even within safety differently. There's even a few posts to that nature about, you know, does safe, you know, do you, there were some people who will say, okay, you start with, you do compliance first and then you do safety differently after that. And my point was like, no, I think safety differently should help us be compliant. When we do compliance, we should do it with a safety differently mindset. So it's not like safety differently is pushing out compliance or it's one or the other. It's, we can do it all, because a lot of these things are already, like you said, already there. I mean, one of the kind of criticisms I hear a lot for all these newer ideas is that, oh, this is not new. And that's 100% correct. Yeah. I agree with that. You know, there's no argument here. That's why we didn't call it safety new. You know, and so, you know, the fact that it's not new actually to me is evidence for why it's a good idea. Yeah. Because if people hadn't been thinking, like yourself, if you hadn't, like when you were 20 years old, had just on your own, you know, a smart person recognized, hey, I should probably go talk to the workers. You know, if people weren't figuring this out on their own, that means it's probably not based in reality. Mm. You know, and so, yeah, let's get, you know, to me, when people talk about what's the first step in doing safety differently, it's get into your organization and figure out what's going on. You know, it's not go to a conference and find the new latest greatest practice. It's get in your organization, start figuring out what's actually happening and how can we support that, make the good stuff happen more, make the stuff that we don't like happen less.
Yeah. I think it feels like it's kind of like contradictory to a, like the human mindset, especially maybe in the Western world, but it's kind of like we need, like when you were saying there, do we do compliance first and then we do safety differently, or is it safety differently first and then compliance and then we'll do safety too after that? It's like what we need, this structure to everything, don't we? I think that's the problem. We need to be told, right, do this step one, step two. It's kind of like IKEA for business, you know, when you get your flat pack furniture. Yeah. And it was kind of reminiscent of, like, you know, since we've had Grenfell in the UK, and I work quite heavily in fire, but we go to so many conferences, and there's loads of businesses there that are housing, hotels, whatever, you know, building owners. And they're all saying, they're all kind of kicking up and moaning, being like, when's the law going to change and make this better for us? And, you know, make our buildings safe by telling us what to do. And I got so frustrated at one of these conferences that I kind of put my hand up and just said, it's not really a question for the panel, it's a question for the room. Like, does everyone agree that they're not comfortable with the risk of their property and they're waiting around for the law to tell them what to do? And pretty much everyone nodded their head or said yes. And I was like, well, the law currently enables you to do what you need to do. And it says, if you're not accepting that risk, if that risk is not comfortable for you, then that means your risk assessment is not good enough, because you're assessing that risk and you've gone, oh, I'm not comfortable with that. Well, do more then. Stop waiting around for the law. But then the flip side is we want to be told what to do in a senior management role, because I think it makes us feel comfortable. But then on the shop floor, we fight against being told what to do. And I find it so interesting. It's kind of like human dynamics. And I'm not a psychologist, but I just find it fascinating that if you were to go to a machine operator, they hate having, or some people hate having those procedures and being told step one, step two, because they're problem solvers. They find a better way to do it. Actually, if I do step one and five together, the machine goes quicker. And you're like, oh, okay, fair enough. But then when we get to senior management, we get that security blanket of guidance, the consultants, the paperwork telling us what to do. I just find it so weird. When do we go through that transition? It's interesting.
Yeah. That's very interesting. And, you know, certainly I can think of some like theories as to why. The one that pops into my head most, actually, and this is another area that I think we need to focus on more in safety, is power differentials.
Okay.
Because if you think about it, the people, you know, so a fundamental motivation for human beings is autonomy. I want to be able to have control of my environment and exercise my, you know, agency, my ability to do something. Mm-hmm. And, you know, this is why people put stickers on their hard hats, right? I mean, it's just like, hey, here I am. I exist. This is me. You know, it's like us peeing on the tree like a dog, you know, I exist. This is mine. You know, I'm not saying it's bad. I think it's actually quite good. You see that also.
I like it. We don't do that in America. You won't. You don't. Oh, sorry. In the UK, you don't see that. People putting stickers on hats.
Oh, really?
America. Never see it. I think, well, I've seen a few people wearing hard hats backwards. That's how we rebel.
Okay.
But I like the sticker thing. I was thinking that the other day, actually. I saw something on LinkedIn of this guy, and he's had a hard hat covered in stickers. And I was like, that looks pretty cool, man.
Yeah, they do that, man. It's a thing out here. But so if you think about it, the people at the bottom of the organization are on average going to have less power, right? And so if we come in and try to tell them, you know, here's the way I want you to do your job, well, they're already in some ways so under control, you know, on what, when they can show up, what they have to wear in many situations, where the people at the top often don't have that. I mean, yeah, maybe there's a dress code, but you can choose. Whereas, you know, normally, no, you got to put on a jumpsuit and it's got to be this color and it's got to have this patch, you know? Mm-hmm. And then, you know, we come along and say, no, and then you have to do the work this way. Well, there would be a natural pushback then, you know, whereas the people at the top, they, you know, they have all the power in the world. They can do what they want, you know? And so they're not as threatened by more control put on them in some ways. I don't know. This is me just kind of thinking out loud, but that's one potential explanation. But to me, that this is stuff I think we should be talking about in organizations and in safety, about okay, how does power actually influence people? Because there is a ton of research in sociology that those things do have real effects on people, you know, both in terms of how they behave and even health effects and things of that nature. But we don't really focus on that in safety. And I feel like that's some untapped resources.
Yeah. The whole industry is set up to that compliance mindset that I found. I'm just looking at my questions and just thinking the questions I wrote are crap and this conversation we're having is really good. So I'm not too bothered that we're not covering any of the questions I've asked. But I do think that the whole industry is set up to this over here in the UK, especially, but I don't know, I couldn't speak for what it's like over there, but it's set up for that compliance mindset, you know, our qualifications that we would get, how we learn about health and safety. It's all about what does the law say. And I was actually talking to another health and safety professional in the UK, and we're going to do a podcast all about training. And he was saying something that for me just absolutely resonated when he goes and sees somebody's training presentation, Death by PowerPoint classic, and you've got 15 slides on the Health and Safety at Work Act first. And it's employees don't give a shit about what section one says and section two says. They want to know about their job, how it applies. And, you know, I try to use training rooms as a forum more about anything else. So I don't want to say expert, but the person that knows a little bit more than them about one specific thing, but they're the experts in their own field, in their own thing. And what you were saying there about that kind of, what did you call it? Power differential. And I was finding it interesting over here in the UK, because we've had Grenfell, we've got a lot of nervous people around fire safety. People who manage buildings are very nervous. So I'm traveling around the country at the moment doing loads of fire safety training. And I'm always saying to these people who are like housing managers, or, you know, similar to like a hotel manager or something like that. It's that kind of role. And I say, do you ever ask your fire risk assessor, like, why he's saying you need something? So a fire risk assessor comes in and says, need a flame retardant notice board in the corridor. Do you say, why? He said, oh, no, because he's the expert. And I just think it's fascinating that, do you know what? When I was in manufacturing, if I went down and said, right, lads, you need to wear some gloves, they'd all be like, why? What are you on about? Why do you have to wear gloves? But we seem to have this flip now where we're taking people's word for granted. We're taking it not granted, sorry, gospel. We're taking the experts for gospel. Now, trust me, I've met a lot of risk assessors that they're not all experts. But they know a lot about one subject, fire safety, if they're our fire risk assessor. But the people that work there know about the customers in the building. They know about the building. They know about the maintenance. They know about the contractors. I said, there's only one person in that conversation that's the expert, and that's you, the housing manager or the hotel manager or whatever, not the risk assessor.
Yeah, absolutely.
And we seem to have gone for a flip, and it reminds me of, I was reading? I think it was one of Andrew Schauman's books a while ago, actually, and he talked about heuristics, which I read as like anchors in your brain. So you can get past anchors, current anchors, and I don't know, future anchors. I can't remember. There was three types. And I think with fire safety, we've got Grenfell anchored in our brain that we want to be told what to do because we're scared. We're scared of liability, moral and legal. So we want to be told what to do. The risk assessors don't want to tell you what to do because they're just as scared about the liability. So they'll write grey comments like, this fire door may be a fire door. It may not be a fire door. And you're just like, and I'm sitting there, what do you want me to do? You want me to make the decision? And it's like, it's so frustrating. But we seem to have a flip in that power differential. And I think it's interesting what you said. Definitely think that is true. But we've definitely had a flip over here.
Yeah, it sounds like it. And I think, you know, that's a fascinating set of events. And there was something I was going to say around that, but it flew away. But that's all right.
It's horrible when that happens.
No, but I think you're totally right in that. So there's a few things that jumped out at me in that, you know, so number one, taking everything that the individual says is gospel, because in safety, it's weird for us, someone to ask the question like you said for them to ask, okay, why? Yeah. Where's the evidence that putting a sign there actually helps? Yeah. Is there evidence? Like, yeah. You know, the average safety person in the United States, I don't know how it is in the UK or anywhere else, but would not be able to answer that question. They wouldn't even know how to begin to answer that question outside of going to our regulator's website and hoping that there's something there, you know?
Subparagraph two line files.
You know? And you know, they're not even aware that there's research that's done on these things. And you know, even if they were aware of it, they don't know how to access it or read it. And I think that's something we need to get really better at as a profession, is equipping safety professionals to identify, access, and interpret evidence and research. You know, so I don't want academics. That's not what I'm saying. I'm just saying, you know, when I tell someone, hey, you should do this, I better have a really good reason to do it. If your doctor just said, hey, you know, you should take this pill. Why? Well, I think it's a good idea. No, there's evidence that the doctor can point to. Well, you know, in these case studies, this improved survivability by this percent, you know, like they can show you that. I think we need to get way better at that. And then to your point about like that person's the expert, putting a sign up. I mean, what's the point of a sign? It's to communicate something and influence behavior. Who's going to have the most knowledge about whether that sign is actually going to be influential to those people in that building? The building owner, right? The risk assessor's not, right? I mean, so like if I'm in an organization, I'm telling, you know, the welders, you know, okay, or I was just dealing with an organization. They wanted us to come in and write up all their procedures and how their people can do safe work tasks. And I was like, A, I don't know how to do all those tasks. But B, like, let's say I knew the right way to do those tasks. Writing a procedure and giving it to your employees and saying, do it this way, it's not going to be a high degree of likelihood they're going to do it that way.
No.
Why? Because your organization's different, right? So your organization is your organization, and every organization is unique in some way, shape, or form. So we have to spend some time to understanding that uniqueness. And oftentimes we don't. We just take it for granted that, you know, oh, safety. You don't question it. You know, it's sacrosanct. But the safety person knows. Why would you ask the safety person questions? Don't ask me. I'm not a safety person. You know, that's it's kind of weird. And I think it's unfortunate.
Yeah, I don't know. I find in the UK, we're stuck in this kind of compliance expert mindset where we're either waiting for the law or some kind of expert to tell us what to do. And I work mostly in fire at the moment, so maybe it'll be different in other industries, and maybe some industries are a bit further ahead than others. I don't know, but I just find we're stuck in this. I'm just seeing roles, you know, appear, new job titles appear left, right and center, that head of compliance and compliance officer. And I'm like, compliance officer? Oh, I thought we stopped using the word officer about 20 years ago. Come on, get with the times. And it's like, all that tells me, compliance, you know, what's compliant for me is doing as you're told. What's an officer? Somebody that tells you you're not doing as you're told and you're going to slap you on the wrist. And it's like, it's a horrible place to work. And I feel like we're taking a step back. I feel like we're slowly going backwards. But then on the flip side, as we talk right now, there's Eastbourne Hotel in the UK. It is on fire. It's absolutely huge fire on the coast in Eastbourne. And it's like, what have we got to do to start people listening? If it takes legislative change, then let's do the legislative change. But it's frustrating when you're talking to business owners and being like, you have the power to do this. Don't wait for that security blanket. Create the security blanket for yourself. You know, if you want to install sprinklers, then go and bloody install them.
Yeah.
We're just sitting around waiting for somebody to tell us what to do. That's how I feel. That is based on no research. So don't ask me what you said a second ago. Like, well, what's the research for that, James? Because I don't have an answer.
Well, I mean, it's based on your experience. And I mean, it certainly resonates with some of my experience as well. And I would say that to me, at least, it's sort of, you know, one of the things that I'm a big believer in is systems thinking. And whenever you have a system that's delivering bad outcomes, it's never the result of one thing. It's always an interaction amongst multiple things. And so trying to think about, okay, what's the system that's influencing that sort of outcome of people just deferring, you know, to others and kind of in a way removing their power and, mm-hmm. you know, like just giving it away. I don't have that ability. Well, you do, you're choosing not to exercise it. I think there's a couple things, you know, partly it's a mindset, but it's also partly when we, you know, this is one of the unintended consequences of creating a safety profession and a safety regulatory structure or governance structure that's based on legislation and liability and law and things like that. Because then we sort of create the idea that, okay, well, safety is something that I'm told to do or forced to do. It's not something that I inherently do on my own. And you can sort of begin to develop the idea that I don't have the power to do it on my own because I have to be forced to do it. It becomes sort of a self-fulfilling prophecy in some situations. And there is some evidence, not in safety that I'm aware of, but there is some evidence that those sorts of things do happen in other contexts where, you know, you kind of get this power self-fulfilling prophecy where people sort of just give up their agency and wipe their hands of it, even though they totally have the ability. You know, and so it's like kind of a concept that I've read about recently that's been sort of fascinating to me. It's one you want to be careful with, because if you go too far, you can, you know, go into some places where you end up removing accountability, you know, other people who need it. But this idea of complicity. If you're in a situation as an organization where you're getting a bad outcome, you know, and you see all these people around you not doing what they should be doing, if you're a part of that system, you are in some way contributing to that outcome. Yeah. In some way, shape, or form, right? So that seems to me, in that equation, the thing I have the most power over is myself. And so if I see a bad outcome, step one, how am I contributing to this thing that I don't like, and how can I make that stop happening? So I do something else to at least say, okay, at least I'm not contributing to it anymore. And sometimes even doing nothing is contributing, right? Mm-hmm. You know, as leaders, we tell this all the time. If you walk by the bad thing, you accept the bad thing, you know, as something that is unacceptable. If you walk by it and don't do anything, it's acceptable now. Mm-hmm. And the same thing's true in organizations. If these bad things keep happening, or, you know, if we're waiting for the regulators to tell us what to do and they're not telling us what to do, well, we're contributing to that in some way, you know? Mm-hmm. So we should, step one, change, you know, change yourself, and then other things start to change after that.
Mm. I think health and safety professionals just start asking themselves that question, and we might start improving our industry a lot. And I think that reminds me of, something I listened to with Simon Sinek, and he talks all about like leadership, but he gives an example, and I'm going to butcher this example, but he uses the example of like doctors in the, I don't know, it was like in the medieval times or whatever. And there were loads of pregnant ladies were like dying basically. And the doctors were doing the research on the cadavers in the morning and delivering the babies in the afternoon and not washing their hands.
Oh, wow.
So yeah. The disease that the pregnant lady ladies were dying from was because of them. And the story, I mean, like I said, I've butchered it. If you want to hear it properly told, go on YouTube and have a look. But he says, you've got to ask yourself, are you the problem? Are you the problem? Because somebody worked it out, apparently, in this story. Somebody worked it out, went to all the doctors and said, you're the problem, guys. You need to start washing your hands. And they were all like, shut up. And it was like a year later or whatever that they finally went, oh, shit, I think we're the problem. I think health and safety professionals, you know, do have to really ask that question. Am I creating some of these problems or at least contributing to them? You know, I don't know about in America, but over here we've suffered for a long time with health and safety gone mad, and kids at schools can't use conkers and play conkers and do stuff like that because they could die. I don't know. And you just think, I don't think all of that is safety professionals. I do think businesses use health and safety to cover up their lack of appetite for this stuff like that. But I do think sometimes you see a lot of safety professionals making decisions, doing things, and just think you're contributing to this mad over the top thing. And the example I'll use to kind of bring this into a loop is I put a post on LinkedIn about when we do a health and safety video, for example, and I was using an example of a person selling a safety product. They were going through this safety product in an office, in a controlled office environment. But because it was a safety-based product, they were wearing a hard hat and a high vis. I'm like, why are you wearing a hard hat and a high vis? You're in an office. Because it's like, oh, it's a safety video. We should wear a hard hat and a high vis. So I put a post up saying, you're devaluing that PPE by using it because people are going to be like, oh, we've got to wear high vis all the time. You're devaluing it. And so stop doing it. In my opinion, that was just my opinion. A lot of people, I would say about 60% of the people in the comments agreed. But there's a lot of people that come across it and didn't agree with it. And a lot of their stances were, I'm going to do as much as I can to eliminate or reduce the risk as much as possible. I'm still going to wear PPE. And I was like, why? If you've reduced the risk as possible, as much as possible, you put segregation in place for, let's use a high-vis example. You put segregation in place so the truck physically cannot hit you while you're wearing a high-vis. Well, it's just, it's even safer, isn't it? No, it's just you being an idiot.
Absolutely. And I mean, the funny thing is, it's a lie. They don't do that. You know, they'll say they do it and they'll give you examples of where they believe they have done it, but they don't. There's nobody who always reduces all risks to the lowest level possible at all times.
And then puts PPE on.
So the easy way to refute it is to ask them, hey, in your morning coffee or your morning tea, how did you verify it wasn't poisoned before you drank it?
That's a great example.
0% of them did it, you know? Yeah. And so how do you know it wasn't poison then? Yeah. Well, when you drank it, you didn't die. Oh, okay. I guess you don't care about your safety then. You know, no, of course. You know, there's some things we have to do because it's safe enough, you know? Yeah. That's not me being flippant and saying safety is bad. Actually, I think us not focusing on that reality is one of the reasons why workers and some managers don't take us seriously, because they recognize there's no way they can get to a zero risk state. For some reason, we keep saying it and we look foolish. Mm-hmm. And then B, we're making the hard decisions about safety. We're kind of taking ourselves out of that conversation. Because if we say that you have to get to zero risk, then we're out of the conversation when it comes time to get the work done, and they have to find a way to take the risk, because you have to. There's no choice.
You're not going to talk to Ron because Ron wants no risk.
Yeah, he's crazy. You know, Ron doesn't know what we're talking about. You know, and so if we come to them and say, you know what, this is a tough question. Safety is not black and white. This is it's nuanced. It's, you know, so when it comes time to make those decisions, let's do it together. You know, when it comes time to figure out what we need to do and where we need to draw the lines, let's just do it. I don't know what the answers are going to be. You don't know what the answers are going to be, but I think together we can come up with a good answer. I think if we do that, we get trust and we make better decisions and we get more safety. I mean, it's like a win-win-win. And it's paradoxically by admitting that safety is hard. You know, it's not easy.
Yeah, 100%.
It's crazy. It drives me bonkers, the 40% people you talk about. I've dealt with them too. I'm just like, you're just lying to yourself. You know, it's not true.
The conversation on LinkedIn, and that's probably another thing that annoys me, is that we can't see it. We seem to not be able to disagree with each other without getting aggressive. And that's essentially where this conversation led. The gentleman just started being rude and aggressive to a point where he called me a snowflake, which I thought was interesting.
So
A snowflake, do you know what that means in the UK? It's like,
I mean, it was a big thing in the United States.
Oh, was it? Okay.
Yeah, particularly
like
during
being
the
soft as shit and all that. And I was like, God, if you knew me, you'd know I'm the opposite of a snowflake. But anyway, he was talking away and he was, you obviously have never worked in oil and gas. You've obviously never worked offshore. And I was just like, oh, well done. You worked in oil and gas. Congratulations.
Yeah.
But it's such a shame. Do you know what?
Living in a cave doesn't make you a geologist. You know, working in oil and gas doesn't make you an expert. Sorry, you know, and you're proving to me that you don't know what it's about. I'm sure he has a lot of great knowledge, and I'm sure these people have a lot to add, but by making themselves willfully ignorant, of what's going on, what it takes to get work done, they're not helping themselves, and they're certainly not making anybody safer.
No. And I just think that I'm conscious we've been chatting for about nearly over an hour now, but so we will bring this to an end.
No worries.
But I do think that there is, you do genuinely devalue it, I think. And, you know, getting people to wear a high vis for the sake of wearing a high vis, safety for safety's sake, like you said earlier, wear gloves just to make it safer. And it's like, but they don't need to wear that. You know, you're trying to reduce the risk to like 0.000%. And, you know, really, they don't need to wear that. But what that does, in my opinion, what that does is people switch off from safety. So they, and it's the same thing. We're not going to talk to Ron because Ron wants no risk. It's the same thing. We're not going to wear PPE because last time we wore it and it was pointless. The one time they do need to wear it, they won't wear it. And a prime example of that was, again, when I was in my youth in safety. I was going to Subway for lunch, and I was walking around the corner, and there was these three gentlemen working on a factory roof. Two were on the roof, one was on the floor. And I walked past, and both of them on the roof had high-vis, hard hat. I mean, they're on the roof. I don't know why they're wearing a hard hat, unless a seagull's going to shit on them or something. So anyway, he's got this hard hat on and a high-vis and a harness. So I was like, okay, they've got a harness. But I was looking. That harness is not connected to anything. So I was young, arrogant. I'd just done my safety like qualification. So I went over and said, like, hey, gents, like, what's the harnesses connected to? I don't understand the point of you wearing them. And they were like, what? And I was like, your harness, not connected to anything. So they're completely pointless.
Mm-hmm.
And he literally went like this. Hang on a sec. Looking for his procedures. He gets his folder out and he goes, wear high vis, wear hard hat, wear harness. No, we're wearing a harness, mate. Go on, piss off, go get your lunch. And I was like, you're wearing a harness, but it's just PPE, it's doing nothing. And I said to him, think about when you fall off the roof, what's that harness going to do? And I knew he didn't have an answer because he just got aggressive and started shouting at me. That is what I think it does when we devalue PPE. And this is just one example. We do it for loads of stuff. We do it for signage as well. But we devalue that stuff. So when we stop people actually using their brains and going, I'm wearing a harness, what is it actually doing? Oh, I need to connect it to something with a lanyard. Oh, great. Is that lanyard tested to take my weight? You know, and you end up asking those questions. But we just take it for gospel, wear a high vis, wear a harness. Harness is doing frig all. It's just frustrating.
Yeah, and to me, that's another great example of what we're talking about. In that, if we, and I love the way you phrased it about, you know, not engaging the people's minds, not getting them to think about this, because why do they have to think when it's black and white? It's just shut up, harness on. Well, no, I mean, working on a roof, anybody who's worked on roofs. You know, a really tough question that often has to get asked is, where would you tie off? You know, where is the appropriate tie off point on there? That's not an easy question to answer that is answerable from an office way far away from the job site. So, you know, we need to get to the job site. We need to go and engage our brains and ask tough questions and figure out how we can make this work in real life. And when we just gave them a book and said, here's what you do to do that job, go out and do it. And if I find you not doing it, I'm going to run you off my job site. We just lost one of the most important safety tools we have, which is our brains, right? We told people to shut your brain off and do the work. That's a shame. You know, it's like we treat, the brains of our workers like an unintended consequence of hiring, you know, muscles.
What a great way to put it. Yeah. And we'll replace those brains with robots that only have one brain and one way of thinking.
Absolutely.
Isn't that the beautiful future?
Exactly. There's a reason why we haven't done that yet, though. I mean, there's a reason why we're having problems with automated cars. There's a reason why, in so many industries, you got to believe if industry could have replaced workers with robots, they would have already, you know, but we can't in most industries. Why? Because work requires mental effort. And when we teach people that it doesn't, and when we treat it like it doesn't, we are doing ourselves a huge disservice.
But then you put it like that, I'm just thinking as you're saying it, if you put it like that, if you're building a robot to run a machine, you have to preempt every single possible solution, system issue, everything that goes on in that machine, to program into that robot what to do next in that situation. And let's ignore AI in that, because I'm nowhere near intelligent enough to even talk about that. Can barely spell AI. So you have to kind of preempt everything. But that's what we're trying to do with procedures and policies. We're trying to preempt everything and teach our human people with the most intelligent brains on the earth, or some of us at least, and we're trying to say, what, do what I think with my one brain, not you problem solve. And it's fascinating. We're treating them like robots, but yet we're struggling to get robots to replace them.
Yeah.
It's ironic, really, isn't it?
The smartest people in the world are trying to figure out how to make work so routine that we can make a robot, and they haven't figured it out yet. But safety professionals, we got this figured out. There's just like very little humility in our profession, and shocking.
Maybe that's a point to leave this conversation. I do think we to be fair, as much as I've not read out my questions, we have covered pretty much everything I was intended to talk about, and I think we've had a great conversation as well. I thoroughly enjoyed it. Thank you for coming on the podcast, Ron. Do you want to give us, I know the website's kind of going over to somebody else, but if you want to plug your business and if people want to talk to you, how they can get hold of you, do you want to do that?
Yeah, for sure. So, I mean, anybody can contact me on LinkedIn. I'm always contactable through that. I work for a consulting company in the United States here, Reflect Consulting Group. It's reflectcg.com. So if anybody wants to contact me through that, you can as well. So I just love, and it doesn't have to be for business stuff. If you just want to talk about something, I'm happy to talk about it.
Cool. And I'll put your LinkedIn and the website and everything all in the description for everybody as well. Cool. Thanks for coming on the podcast, Ron. I really appreciate that.
Thank you, James. I appreciate it.
Okay, guys, I hope you enjoyed that. If you did, give us a like. If you listen on YouTube, if you listen on iTunes, don't forget to rate and review the podcast. If you do leave us a review, don't forget to screenshot it and tweet us at Rebranded Safety, or come find me on LinkedIn, James McPherson. Come find us on Facebook as well, Rebranding Safety. We are absolutely everywhere. So come and hit us up on social media. We would love to engage with you further. All the links and stuff we've mentioned in the podcast, we're going to link in the description, so make sure you check out below. Make sure you go and check out safetydifferently.com. Doesn't matter if you're a safety professional or business owner, doesn't matter. There's some real innovating stuff on there, some real eye-opening blogs, videos, etc., all on that website. It's absolutely great website to add to your favorites list. Try and think of three people that you know that will benefit from listening to this podcast. Share this with them. We need to get this message out there, people. We need more and more people just thinking about health and safety as a positive thing to improve their business, a way to manage their risk that affect their brand, etc. It's not just that old school health and safety. It's all about improving your business. And that's what we need to do. So make sure you become part of this campaign. I'll catch you next week in the podcast. Safe.
Hey everyone, you're looking for something a little bit different for your next digital or physical conference, business event, safety event? How about Health and Safety's first and only YouTuber? Go to www.rebrandedsafety to get Rebranded Safety at your next event, or email me at james@rebrandedsafety.com. Catch you later. Safe.